Where do the insider trading investigations go from here?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California and is supported by Putnam Investments, focused on finding opportunities one stock at a time on the web at putnam.com/largecapequity.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in New York. I'm Jeremy Hobson. The biggest insider trading case ever is over. I'm talking about yesterday's conviction of Galleon hedge fund manager Raj Rajaratnam. The government made its case against Rajaratnam using wiretaps. That was a first for an insider trading case and a warning shot by government regulators who want to show Wall Street they're serious about enforcing the rules. Our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore says the Rajaratnam case is just the beginning.
On Monday in New York, four more Galleon employees are scheduled to start their trial on securities fraud. They opted to face a jury rather than strike a plea deal like 21 of Rajaratnam's other accused associates.
They're going to have to reassess their willingness to go to trial now that they've seen Rajaratnam convicted.
That's Mark Rifkin, a partner with Wolf Haldenstein. He says it's not just Galleon. This spring and summer will see the fruits of a 3-year government effort to chase down insider traders. Here's Tony Barkow. He's a former U.S. attorney who teaches at New York University's law school.
There are already a lot pending. A victory at trial often tends to embolden the government to bring more cases.
Several big hedge funds, including SAC Capital, a giant in the industry, are in the sights of government investigators. But one big triumph doesn't mean they'll win them all. In New York, I'm Heidi Moore for Marketplace.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is in Greenland today for a meeting of the Arctic Council. She's the first U.S. Secretary of State to attend an Arctic Council meeting, and she's going because climate change is having big environmental and economic effects in the Arctic region. For more on this, let's bring in our sustainability reporter, Scott Tong. He's with us now from Washington. Good morning, Scott.
Hey, good morning, Jeremy.
So what are we expecting from this meeting in Greenland?
Well, the meeting is a group called the Arctic Council, and they expect an agreement to come out on search and rescue operations for potential disasters in the Arctic waters. We've already had one cruise ship that ran aground in the Arctic recently, and there are going to be other ships there. With less ice, more commercial ships will sail through there as well, from Russia, Asia, North America, Scandinavia. And of course, we're going to be seeing more high-tech ships drilling for oil and gas in the Arctic. The last month brought two big oil discoveries, one off of Greenland, one in the Arctic Circle. So also on the agenda at this meeting is how do you prepare for an oil spill in these treacherous waters?
And it sounds like with this oil discovery and also with these new shipping lanes, climate change may have produced the next big thing economically.
Well, no one is saying it's an unvarnished good. Melting polar ice caps, they raise sea levels.
Right.
They impact 4 million indigenous people who live in the areas. Irreversible effect on marine ecosystems. The stakeholders say the challenge is to balance those concerns with the economic opportunity. Jobs, tax revenues, oil and gas royalties. I spoke today to Charles Doran at Johns Hopkins, and he says it's sort of like the gold rush of the 1800s.
We had a very violent development of the West, which, of course, is legendary. On the Canadian side, it was far more orderly because the government had established actual police work in advance of some of this development.
So the lesson, Jeremy, is to get the rules right before the actual game.
And what's the potential for conflict between countries here?
Well, a big one is country boundaries. Right now, it's generally accepted that each country has a 200-mile economic zone where their waters belong to them. Hmm. Beyond that could be the question. Already the Russians have gone to the Arctic and planted a Russian flag. Well, actually, they sank a titanium Russian flag in the seabed. You know, great publicity stunt. The experts say the notion of conflict for now could be overstated. The key is to manage it. And the first thing is to do surveillance and to know who's sniffing around up there.
Marketplace's Scott Tong with us from Washington. Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are down this morning across Europe and Asia, down more than 1.5% right now in Frankfurt. Oil has taken a tumble. It's back down to $96 a barrel in New York trading as demand for gasoline in the U.S. fell by the biggest amount in almost 2 months. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow dropped 130 points to close at 12,630.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com.
and by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Comer Science and Education Foundation, dedicated to supporting innovative programs making a positive impact on the lives of individuals and communities.
The United Kingdom is the number one overseas destination for American travelers, but a new Lonely Planet guide says tourists might want to think twice about visiting. The guide says the UK is full of overpriced restaurants and boring tourist attractions. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports from London.
Overcrowded, overrated, and overpriced, that's the Lonely Planet Guide's unflattering assessment of much of Britain. The county of Surrey, it says, is dull and boring. Essex is full of aggressive working-class youth. Dover is depressing. And don't go to Durham unless you only want to visit the cathedral. The review is sure to be a blow to Britain's $25 billion a year tourist industry. But lead author David Else makes no apology for candour.
We don't take advertising. We're not in any kind of link with the local tourism promotions people. We travel incognito. We pay our own way. And that gives us the freedom to tell it as it is.
And he says that while expensive, some parts of Britain are still the most fascinating places in the world to explore. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And finally to Saginaw, Michigan, where 92 years ago, a lumber baron named Wellington Burt died but didn't want to leave his fortune to his family. In fact, he stipulated in his will that almost all of his cash could not go to his living descendants. Well, now all of those living descendants have died, and his $100 million fortune will be divvied up among family members who never knew him. A local historian says he still can't figure it out what ticked off Wellington Burt in the first place. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Zyrtec, Zyprexa, Zyvox. Drug names, of course, difficult to pronounce, difficult to understand, and in desperate need of a vowel.
It's getting to be a little bit like the Slovak language, difficult to pronounce, difficult to deal with.
I'm Kai Rizdal, the big business of naming drugs. We'll have the day's headlines as well and the numbers from Wall Street next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.